To get your some nice estimates, we'll hand out some papers, paper sheets, soon. And it would be nice if you can write down your best estimates for these two, perhaps also some other exponents if you manage to look at them today. So that's one thing. So we'll be collecting these, and at the end, I will actually describe what the models are that you've been looking at, and then we can compare kind of the collective findings to the actual conjecture scaling exponents. I think that would be kind of fun. Now another thing which I think would be fun, not only for us but maybe also for you, is just to try to think of your own observable, and just think of something and try to measure it, and try to surprise us. If you have difficulty thinking of anything, then we would be happy to give you some inspiration or some headers where you could look for new observables. But yeah, I would like to see as a community what we can creatively cook up. And if in doing this, or from just your finite size scaling analysis, you have produced some nice plots, you can send them to my email address, and then at the end of the lecture, I might actually show them to the other people, so that we can analyze whether our efforts have been successful yesterday and today, or less successful. But okay, nice plots are nice plots. That's the most important thing. Okay, is that clear? Then please get started. You're trying to still win a prize here.
Oh no, I'm so far away from prizes.
Okay, I'll just get started to describe the models for you. So this is model A. So model A is actually a quadrangulation decorated by some kind of tree, and is actually extremely simple to generate. So what I do is I take a random sequence of triangles that are either up pointing or down pointing, and you should think of this as a strip with periodic boundary conditions, so just the black edges. And then I take two independent random matchings of the lower part of the strip and the upper part of the strip. And there are simple algorithms to choose these random matchings. And one can think of these matchings as actually taking two uniform random trees and gluing them in some kind of canonical way. And what you get is a geometry which looks like this, and this is model A. I'll get to the scaling exponents at the last slide. So what is model B? Model B is basically a uniform random tree, or a branched polymer. And the simple way to generate a random tree is to first generate what's called a Dieck path, which is just a path that takes plus one or minus one steps, starts at zero, ends at some integer, which is basically the size of your tree, and is required to stay on or above the x-axis. And there are simple ways to generate such paths. And then you take a bit of glue, you put it on the inside, and you squeeze your tree. You get something like this. And then what I just did, roughly, is I replace every edge by two quadrangles, or by a little tube made of two quadrangles. And that gives me this quadrangulation. And one should think of these as really the most degenerate geometry you can build out of these quadrangles, which still have some notion of central charge, which we'll see in the last slide. Then model C. This is actually the pure gravity model. Here I'm using uniform quadrangulations. But the geometry you would get by just simulating the random triangulations using the Monte Carlo Markov chain algorithm would look very similar to this. Instead, in this black box, I use a different algorithm to generate them. starting first from a uniform random tree, so the same tree that they had on the previous slide. And there happens to be a nice mathematical bijection between such trees with a certain labeling and quadrangulations of the sphere, which I'm not going to describe in detail, but essentially you just put uniform random pluses, minus, and zeros on the edges of the tree. That leads to some labeling on the tree, and then there is a canonical way to draw edges connecting various vertices in the trees. And these edges will form exactly a quadrangulation, which is exactly uniform in the space of all quadrangulations. So that is model C. And then model D, which is actually the latest model that I added to the black box, and the one which I think hasn't been studied numerically at all so far. This is a triangulation which is decorated, or which is colored by a certain number of colors, so blue, green, and red. And all the edges of a certain color, they form a tree within this triangulation. And more precisely, if you look at every vertex in this triangulation, all the blue edges coming in and the red, they come in a particular form. So we have the blue edges, they come in and then they leave at the opposite side of the edge. So there is always, you have blue incoming edges, red outgoing edge, green incoming edges, blue outgoing edge, red incoming edges, and a green outgoing edge. And this is true for every vertex in the triangulation, as you can check, except for three of these outer vertices. And again, there is a mathematical bijection which takes a triangulation together with such a coloring. It maps it into a certain type of Dieck path on the lattice. And this Dieck path I can sample quite straightforwardly and build the triangulation out of it. And this is the triangulation that looks the most smooth of the models. And we can actually see this when we look at the critical exponents that are conjectured for these models. Essentially, the exponents that can be most easily calculated analytically are the susceptibility exponents, which you haven't measured, you could have measured. And you can see that for all these models, the susceptibility exponents are either integers or half integers. And so if you know those exponents, and you believe the relation between susceptibility and the central charge, and you believe the other conjectured formulas, I can calculate what the other exponents would be. And so, in fact, the red parameters that I show here, they are the ones that I've calculated in this way, and they're certainly not proven in any way. So they rely on these conjectures. Most of the black exponents that I have here can actually be proven to be correct using mathematical tools. So let's have a look how close we managed to get. So for model A, the Hausdorff dimension is 3.56. What? 3.54? Whose was this?
You.
Me? Oh, that's okay. That's pretty good. 3.6 is what? Certainly plus minus 0.1. Impressive. So some of them are actually outside of the error range, but yeah, it seems that the error bars have not been constructed in a too systematic fashion. Okay, so let's look at model B. So there, the Hausdorff dimension, we expect it to be 2. And actually, that is really quite close to what you can measure. And the fact that the Hausdorff dimension is as little as 2 makes that it should be easier to measure this one than the ones for the other models, because you don't have to go to very large system sizes to get a reasonable distance between points. Okay, model C, so these are the uniform quadrangulations. So we should have Hausdorff dimension 4. Well, not too bad. Who's with this?
Me? Too?
You're good. Very well done. And here, as you see, most of the estimates are actually underestimates. And this is not so surprising for C, because actually C has the largest Hausdorff dimension here. So if you want to get, say, a diameter of 10, or a distance of, say, 10 between points, then you have to take a system size, which is at least 10 to the power 4, plus or minus, whatever. So that's already 10,000. And already with the Mathematica notebook, that was already a bit challenging to go up to 10,000. So clearly, for the other models, one can actually go to larger distances with smaller system sizes. OK, and model D, what was the 2.85? OK, so we see a slight overestimate here. But it's certainly most of the measurements come out close to 3, which is not too far off. I'm afraid it's not quite worth a publication. Sorry, guys. But nice try. Spectral dimension, so some of you have measured that. And reading off from the plot, so A, C, and D, they should all have spectral dimension 2. And that's actually pretty close to what you've seen. So they're slightly underestimated, but clearly they favor 2 over the 4/3 that you get for these large central charge models. And certainly for B, which was just a random trees, I see two values of 1.3, which is clearly close to 4/3. So that's certainly a success in some respect. Now, if you would put these exponents into the formula for the central charge, you could actually see that you get a central charge of minus 2 for the spanning tree. Branch polymer, I mean, they correspond to something which has central charge larger than 1. They're all in the same universality class. Uniform quadrangulations, well, by definition, they're not coupled to matter, so they should have central charge 0. And these triangulations, the colored triangulations, they actually have a very negative central charge. It's all the way down here, which makes it kind of an interesting model to look at. In general, when you look at random surfaces coupled to matter fields with central charge, they become more and more smooth the more negative your central charge becomes. And in the limit of negative infinite central charge, actually, your surface will roughly be a round sphere. So that's kind of the classical limit in 2 dimensions. Did anyone send me a plot? I didn't receive anything, so no beers for you today. Are there any questions? Are you satisfied by your own measurements? Disappointed? It's not always as easy as you might or might not expect. But you should see this as a kind of a trial version of what you may encounter when in the future you try to do some random geometry or any other kind of Monte Carlo simulation. Here, I knew roughly what these models corresponded to before I did the simulation, but in general, if you just think of a model and you gather data, then you really have to work with what you see in the data. And this was kind of a trial version of this experience. Okay, any comments? Objections?
You did a great job.
Great, thank you.